We're going to turn to Joshua chapter 3. I will not be continuing on in Dad's study. I remember when I was in college the first year, he was teaching on 1 Corinthians, and it was the summer break, and I came home, and he was going to be out of town several weeks in a row, and he had me, you know, do a chapter a week, like he sometimes does, not so much every week as a chapter now, but that was the last time where I would step in and fill in some, and then he'd come back and either correct me or, you know, continue on in the lesson, but I'm not going to do that tonight. We are going to start in the same place and then kind of just look at the life of Joshua. I've been talking about Joshua in junior church, and Joshua always was one that stood out to me. My middle name is Joshua, so he's always made me wonder. And then the Woodward son, Joshua, his middle name is Adam, so that was kind of a weird coincidence too. But so that name, Joshua, stood out. And as Dad has already told us, his name means salvation, and he was born in slavery. We've been talking about it the last few weeks, but he was born in slavery, and then he got to watch God's man Moses lead the children of Israel out of Egypt, and he was the number two guy, the right-hand man, following Moses around. And I want to start the story that I am sure we'll pick up next week when Pastor's back, Joshua chapter 3, just read that first verse, and again, I'm not teaching through verse by verse, but I want to look at Joshua's life. And Joshua rose early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim and came to Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. And as we'll see in the next few weeks, Joshua is about to make a big step in following after the course that God has laid out for him. He's about to cross over the Jordan River. And God has given Joshua up to this point many opportunities. The story of Jericho, most everybody knows, that hasn't happened yet in the book of Joshua. We already talked about Rahab and the spies. I talked about it in junior church, and we've talked about it here on Wednesday night, and how God had, under Joshua's leadership, God had already done some miraculous things in delivering the spies, in preparing Joshua, in giving him boldness, and telling him he had what he needed in order to lead the people. And he was the one that got the opportunity to lead God's people into the promised land. And the first little point I want to make that reminds me over and over in Joshua's life is don't miss the opportunities that God allows you to have. Every opportunity you get, not everybody gets that opportunity. And I talked about it before, but there are some things, there are some opportunities we have today that no one ever has ever had throughout history. The influence that we can have, the network that capability that we can have, the outreach that we can have today compared to 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. Many people talk about the end times in the book of Revelation where the two prophets, the whole world can see them. And nobody could imagine how that could happen where everybody in the whole world could be watching one event. But we're coming up on 10 years on September 11th. And within minutes, the whole world knew what had happened in one little spot in New York. And we see over and over again the opportunity. Yes, there are worse and worse things happening, but the opportunity to influence and the opportunity for that network or that communication. Brother Gene talks about talking to his son in another country face-to-face over a computer. You know, 10 years ago, you couldn't get your computer to display two pictures within minutes of each other, but now we can see almost a real person in the same room with us. And so those opportunities that God gives us, he gives different opportunities to different people. And we talked about Moses, how God had used him greatly, but God needed Joshua to lead the people into the promised land. And realize, tonight, if you haven't already, realize that you're being trained for something that you can't fully see, you can't fully conceive it, and you can't fully understand it. Joshua was a willing vessel to God, but I don't think he understood everything that God was going to allow him to do. But he still was willing and able to follow God. Handle today's challenges with the bigger picture in mind, even though you can't understand and see it all. Different illustrations, but take a step backwards or get a little higher. People talk about flying in an airplane and, you know, realizing how small we are compared to all the other little ants on the ground, and realizing that God always sees us in that way as so much greater than us, and realize that we are part of a plan. And that God can use us in that plan if we're yielded to him. And I see that over and over again in the life of Joshua. And I think about Joshua following after Moses. Moses was a great man and had been greatly used of God. And Joshua was his follower. But I don't think his final focus was on Moses. And again, that's no detriment or, you know, attack on Moses. Moses was a great guy, but I think that Joshua was focused on what God could do to a surrendered life. When Moses had doubts and Moses got frustrated and, you know, he hit the rock when he was supposed to speak to the rock and he did have other bad days, I think Joshua was still focused on the one that was using Moses and not so much focused on if he didn't let God's will depend on any one man. Joshua believed in what God was going to do. In Numbers chapter 14, when Joshua and Caleb had come back, it says they tore their clothes when they were talking about the 12 spies. And Joshua and Caleb came back, and they had such passion for what they believed in. They said, this is God's promised land, and we have God on our side. And all the things that are supposed to be negative, those are actually positive things. It says in Numbers 14, I'll read through verse 8. It says, if the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. And that was what I wanted to draw out. They are bread for us. All the things that you think are bad, the Bible says they begged for attention. They tore their clothes and said, no, everything that we've just talked about is God's blessing. Everything that they think they have against us is really in our favor. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Over and over again, Joshua said, my faith and my trust is in God. And Joshua stood there before those people, not in Joshua chapter 3, but before he was even a leader. And he was so passionate about what he believed. His clothes didn't matter. He was in the minority. But it didn't matter because he believed that God had a promised land for his people. And even though Joshua was not the leader, he still expressed what he thought God had in store for them because Moses had asked him to give his opinion. And today I want to remind you, what Joshua's focus needs to be our focus. It's not our battle. Joshua saw the enemies of God and the people that were going to keep them out of the promised land, and he said, those are there, they're controlled by God. It's not our battle, it's God's battle. David said it when he faced Goliath. He said, the battle is the Lord's. And David brought small weapons to fight a big giant because he said, it's not my battle, it's God's battle. Peter said that it's not your heartache, it's not your burden, it's God's. In 1 Peter 5, he said, younger, submit to the elder, and all of you be subject one to another. Be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble. And he said, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. All of that to say, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. It's not our battle, it's God's battle. Now we're going to be used by God to fight the battle. And it's not our heartaches and our trials. They are God's trials. God said, cast your care on him because he cares for you. And I think about, the more I think about God the Father, the more I think about being a father myself. And there are many things that Aaron will cry about and whine, and it's the end of the world. You know, it has to be fixed right now. And if I was looking at someone else's child and thought, you know, I don't know what their problem is, I wish they'd get over it, but since he's my child, what bothers my son bothers me. And God's the same way. We are his child, so even though our problems might be tiny and they'll be gone tomorrow, they are still God's problem because he loves us because we are his child. And it's not our heartache, it is God's if we cast it on him. It's not our trial or our burden or our martyr complex. I always use that, but it's not our guilt or our feeling that everything's on us. It's God's. Jesus said in Matthew 11, come unto me, all ye labor and are heavy laden, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am weak and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. It's not your problem as much as it is God's problem. And Joshua said, yes, I see the resistance, I see the enemy, but I know the God that we serve. And all throughout Joshua's life, he reminds us, we're not in this by ourselves, and the only reason we're able to do anything is because God gives us the help to do it. And there are no small problems with God. It's not your doubt or your fear or your exasperation or your fatigue. David said, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. And I thought about this. There are people in my life that I wish would change, and they probably wish I would change. And there are people that, you know, they never got it. They don't get it, and they're not going to get it. That's the way you feel about them. But those people, whether or not they are in Christ, they are of God. God gave us the world and those that dwell therein. What I'm trying to say is they're not my problem. They are God's problem. And the more I focus on the critics and the people I wish would change, the less I can focus on who I should be focused on, which is God. The same for those people that I care about and I love. And even though they might not love me as much as I love them, they're still God's and they're not mine. And if I try to take them from God, I've lost my focus on God and I put my focus on man. I think about a beautiful instrument. I appreciate Chris playing tonight. If she was not here and if Marlene were not here and if Ruth, if there were no one here that knew how to play the piano, we'd only be able to sing Row Your Boat, Chopsticks, or I dropped my dolly in the dirt. I can't play the piano. But I appreciate a good musician who takes an instrument and uses it. Now, if I put all of my focus on that beautiful piano, or Brother Wayne's up here on the clarinet, and said how wonderful an instrument it was and what beautiful music it makes, I would be mistaken. Because if I tried to use that instrument, it would not be a beautiful thing. If I focused on the instrument instead of the person playing or person using the instrument, I've lost my focus on where the gift and the talent comes from. If I look at a beautiful painting and think, wow, that's magic paint. Somebody just threw that paint up there and it made a beautiful picture. I'm focused on the wrong thing. I'm focused on the product instead of the person or the maker or the person that has the ability to work in my life. God being the painter, God being the musician, God being the mind that put the person to work. And Joshua, I don't think, was focused so much on Moses, because he had to make his own choices. He had to make his own decisions. Moses was not there. God took Moses to heaven, and Joshua had his own choices to make. So he had to rely on God's ability. I do have points. I'll review them at the end. But Joshua had to rely on God's ability, and he had to accept the rejection. I've been reading from Numbers chapter 14, when Joshua and Caleb came to the congregation and said, they tore their clothes and said, the land's ready. We need to go in. You know, our God will supply. There are giants, but God will give us the strength that we need. God is on our side. And what happened is the congregation decided they wanted to stone them. The people that were supposed to listen and react to the leadership of God's man, who turned out to be the leader of Israel at this, not at this time, but the people at that time listened to the two good spies and said, can we kill these people? Can we throw rocks? And that's what happened. Joshua had to wait. That's my next point. Joshua had to wait for God's timing before he could act, so the promise could be fulfilled. Joshua and Caleb, I don't know, they could have tried to say, you know, throw your rocks, but we're going to go in now. We're going to take the promised land now. That was not God's plan. And we're all the way up to Joshua chapter 3, where he's about to cross the Jordan River and see and realize what he talked about all the way back in Numbers chapter 14. All that time waiting on God to lead, waiting on God's timing, waiting on man to get out of God's way so that they could take what God had already promised to them. So Joshua he couldn't rely on men. He had to rely on God. He couldn't rely on his own timing. He had to rely on God's timing. And then the main point of the whole night, if you leave with nothing else, Joshua realizes that God chooses how he leads, and we choose how we follow. And again, I'm not going to go verse by verse through this whole story, but in Joshua chapter 3, it talks about the children of Israel crossing through the Jordan River. And these people at least had heard of, I mean, like we talked about before, this was a new generation, but they had heard of the Red Sea. They'd heard of crossing the Red Sea with Moses. And God chose a different way to lead them in the splitting of the Red Sea in Exodus 14. He put big walls on either side. You could see a path all the way through. In the parting or the stopping of the Jordan River, the men bearing the Ark of the Covenant took one step at a time, and the waters parted, and they had to get all the way out to the middle before there was a path all the way across. And God chooses different times and different ways of leading us. And they're God's way, so they're not wrong. But God doesn't always lead in the same way. Sometimes we have little faith, and God needs to show a miraculous thing, and sometimes if we choose to follow God, he'll give us one step at a time. And God chooses how he leads. If it were up to me, I would say, God, I want Red Sea leadership every day. I want to see the entire path. And if you don't show me the entire path, I won't take one step. But I don't get to choose how God leads. I get to choose how I follow. And Joshua, who remembered the Red Sea, had to choose to follow God despite the way that God led. Isaiah was the same way. In Isaiah chapter 6, after he saw the Lord, he said, woe is me, I'm a man of unclean lips. God uses people that feel like failures. God uses people that are unsteady and unsure when he used Moses to talk to Pharaoh. And again, we're not supposed to focus on the man. We're supposed to focus on the leading of God. God accepts the doubts that we have. And he uses our doubts to prove the faith that we should have had when we were doubting, as he did with Gideon. He He was gracious enough with Gideon to say, all right, I'll show you with signs. I'm sure we'll talk about it when we get to the book of Judges. But he said, I will condescend. I will answer your doubts. And I will prove to you that I'm good enough to lead you the way that you should follow me without doubting me. God is a very gracious God. It may be our own doubts, and it may be by our own doubts, but it could be other people's disapproval. And that last verse I read, the people said, Joshua and Caleb, you are nuts. I don't believe you. In fact, what you're saying is so dangerous, we want to kill you with stones. We want to kill you. Now, all the people that went to pick up stones to kill Joshua and Caleb, most of them had not seen the promised land. Most of them had listened to the 10 spies' report, and they believed the 10 spies, and they did not want to die. So they said, instead of all of the children of Israel dying, let's just get some rocks and kill these two guys. But what Joshua realized was he had a different perspective than the people with the stones had. All throughout life, you're going to have to endure the criticism of other people, the disapproval. In Joshua's case, he knew he was right. He knew that God was with them, but he had to wait on God's timing. He had to wait on the criticism of others. He had to wait on that attitude to literally pass away so that he could stand ready to lead God's people into the promised land. And praise and criticism are almost the same. If Joshua would have had a person praising him and say, you know what, Joshua, you really should not wait. You should just go ahead and go now. That would have been just as wrong as if he had listened to the criticism and said, you know, right, it's not God's promise. Forget I said anything. Either way, if Joshua had listened to praise or criticism, he would not have been available to be used when God wanted to use him. And again, my main point, live for God, not men. In 1 Thessalonians 2, it says, but as we were allowed of God to be put in trust with the gospel, even so we speak not as pleasing men, but God, which trieth our hearts. And try to get past wanting to please people and get past that, not back away from it, but get past wanting to please people and start wanting to please God. In Ephesians chapter 2, it says, we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works. Yet God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. And that word before ordained just means God made us for a purpose. Again, I have a 3-year-old now. One of his favorite shows is called Handy Manny, and I brought him tonight for my illustration. He's in my bag. He's all squished up. But this is Manny. He is a repairman, and these are Manny's tools. Now, Manny's a very important guy, but his tools are probably more important because Manny doesn't really do anything, as far as I can tell. He just finds a problem, and then his tools come out, and they fix the problem for him. But my favorite, because I have to watch this whenever Aaron wants to. My favorite tool that Aaron loves him too, his name is Pat, and he's a hammer. And he always says, I'm Pat, I'm a hammer. And, you know, Manny has a problem. Maybe he needs to cut a board, or someone's doghouse is busted and they need to screw in some screws, and he has other tools. But Pat always says, I'm a hammer, I'll fix it. So Pat always jumps on the ball, and he tries to fix the problem, whether or not he's the right tool for the job. And I thought about that when I read that verse. We are God's workmanship. We've been made for a purpose. So Pat was made to be a hammer. He was meant to hammer nails. And we as Christians were made to serve God. Now sometimes we step out of what our role is, just like Pat wants to screw in screws or saw a board. Sometimes as Christians we want to step out of our role and do something outside of the will of God, outside of what God designed us to do. And since we're God's workmanship, it usually doesn't work out the best way. If we try to step in, like we talked about, the way that God leads us, if we try to step in and be God or choose the way that God leads us, we're no longer doing the work of a Christian. We're doing someone else's work. And if we say, if we acknowledge that God made us, which we do, and if we acknowledge that we're his workmanship and we were made for a purpose, then any other purpose that we try to do becomes comedy. It doesn't work the way it's supposed to. In Galatians chapter 1, it says, for do I now persuade men, trying to win men's approval, or God? Do I seek to please men? For if I yet pleased men, I should not be the servant of Christ. And again, that concept of you can't serve two masters. If I am trying to please a man, no matter how good the man is, I'm still trying to please the wrong person. That man might have God's best in store for me, but I'm still focused on the wrong thing. And that's what I'm talking about tonight. Don't focus on the product so much as the one that is producing the Christian life, that's producing the Christian that you envy or that you want to be like. We get to the end of Joshua's life. This is Joshua chapter 24. Joshua came to the people and he says, "You're witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen you, the Lord, to serve him." And they said, "We are witnesses." And that's my challenge tonight. Each of us are witnesses to our own life. Hopefully, we can remember what we've done and where we've been and the people we've witnessed to and the people we have influenced. And we are the best and probably the most reliable witness of our life. The one that has seen it all and remembers most of it, hopefully. And Joshua said, you're witnesses today. You're making a promise to God. And the people said to Joshua, "The Lord our God will we serve, and his voice will we obey." This is Joshua 24, verse 25. It says, "So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and set them a statute and ordinance in Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God and took a great stone and set it up there under an oak that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And he said to the people, this is a stone, a witness to you to remember." It says he died. He was 110 years old and they buried him. And it says in verse 31 of Joshua 24, "And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that out overlived Joshua and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel." So the people that knew Joshua, they served God. The people that had heard of Joshua and the people that outlived Joshua, they served God. And all throughout the book, as we'll see in the next few weeks, he didn't have a perfect example set before him. There were failures. We'll talk about them in the next few weeks, but it wasn't a perfect life. But all throughout his life, I think he kept his focus on the Maker and not on any one man or any one product of his faith. He was focused on God and not the circumstances. So here's my main points. I rambled through all of them, but don't miss the opportunities that God allows you to have, because not everyone has the opportunity that you have. Realize you're being trained for something that you can't fully see or conceive or understand, but realize that you're supposed to be paying attention and learning, because that test will come, and we need to be ready when it does come. Focus more on God and less on man, and there are wonderful examples all through the Bible that we should look at as an example to learn how to be more like Christ, how to be a follower of our Maker, God. Focus on the brain and not so much the individual members of the body. And God and Joshua had to be focused in that way to lead the way that he led. It's not your battle or your heartache. The battle is the Lord's. And if Joshua had ever believed it was up to him, and we might see in the next few weeks when he came to Ai, if we ever believe it's up to us and it's our planning and our knowledge and our ability to act, then that's when we'll fall. That's when we'll lose the faith that we should have had in God, and we'll put it in man. And when we do that, we take on God's battle, God's heartache, God's burden, instead of giving it to him. Live for God, not man. Don't fall by the wayside to your critics. Realize they might see things differently, and it's up to you to show them what God has shown you. Don't ever assume somebody has the same burden or the same outlook that you have, because no two people have the same perspective on anything. Rely on God's ability, on God's timing, and live to please God alone, because God has already accepted you. The Bible says when we were in our sin, Christ died for us. God already accepted us where we were, and we shouldn't be trying to please anybody else. God chooses how he leads. We choose how we follow, and don't mix them up. We can't choose how God leads us, but we always can choose how we follow him. And then we're all witnesses against ourselves. We are the one that sees all that we do, and we know when we lose faith in God. We know when we choose to follow someone else, and we let God choose how he leads us. And I was thinking about Joshua and Moses today. Most of the day I was waiting with my dad, and this has happened to me a few times now. They'll put him on some kind of medication, and he'll come out, and he'll be a little dizzy. And today we went out. He wanted to go get something to eat, and it was kind of a one-on-one time. I don't know how often Joshua had this with Moses when he was following him, but kind of that, I don't know how to say it, like that comfort level. You start talking about things. You put life in perspective because, you know, you're around doctors, and doctors always make you think morbid thoughts. But I wonder how many times Joshua got to sit with Moses and talk about what God had used Moses to do, and then Moses talking to Joshua and not knowing everything that God would use him to do. But that one-on-one time, don't ever lose the ability to learn from one another. Don't lose that passion that you have. When Joshua tore his clothes and said, yeah, we're going to do it, I believe even as he followed Moses for many more years, I still believe he said, Moses, we have the same faith, we serve the same God, and I do believe that's God's promise. If he promised it to you, then he can use me or whoever he wants to use to see it happen. And don't lose that intimacy or that connection with other Christians in your life. Just because you are focused on God, don't lose the fellowship and the brotherhood, however you want to say it. Don't lose the friendship that you have with those that God has placed in your life, because he put teachers and loved ones to shake you and remind you of what you need to be to serve God. So every bit of life is important, but our focus should be on the one that made us and pleasing him. And that's my whole point tonight. Again, we'll pick back up and Joshua chapter 3 when Dad comes back. And I just wanted to look at it from a follower's perspective as opposed to a leader, and realize that Joshua transitioned from a follower to a leader. And each of us will do that in some area of our life, whether we know it or not, whether we can see it and understand it or not. We will be there someday. And with God's help, we'll be focused on God and not focused anywhere else. So let's all stand together. We'll have a word of prayer. Thank you for being here.